There was a lot of shouting and the usual stuff when Henry proposed that they pick out a couple of representatives, one from each group, and then let the two of them go out in the parking lot and settle things like real men. The flagman dropped his arm and the bear was off. The Guidos went along with it, but said it had to be Henry and not Brandon because Brandon is so big, you know? Henry sped across a short flat and dug in, the KTM bouncing from one berm to another, chewing up a few sparse patches of sagebrush. Big mistake. No shit. The mob guys selected this weightlifter that they had with them. The guy swings his haymaker at the bear, who does a double arm block, pivots his elbow into the guy's gut, and then brings the back of his fist up into the guy's face. 3 seconds. Done. Henry shot up the hill and bounced over the approach rollers that kept the rider from establishing too much speed too quickly. He flew a good 20 feet and then navigated to the side of the devilish curve to dig in, and then caught traction, again shooting up the hill through the tufts of prairie grass. What did the mob guys do? They didn't know whether to shit or go blind, so they just stood there and then carried the guy back to their car and went back to Jersey, I guess. Henry was approaching the top, but had lost some momentum as the front tire began slowly lifting from the turf. So the dancer was Lola? No, but Lola was there, and I guess she liked the cut of the bear's jib or something like that. Both Jamie and I slid off the tailgate, unconsciously drawn to the hill like spectators to a train wreck. The front wheel of the KTM kept rising, even with all of Henry's weight hanging over the handlebars, but he was so close to the precipice that I thought for sure he was going to make it. Anyway, they hooked up after that, and were together off and on for a while. The bear held on till the last second and then flipped over backward. Uh-oh. We watched as Henry rolled to the side to get out of the way of the out-of-control motorcycle that missed him only by inches and then cartwheeled down the hill before slamming to the ground. He sat and watched it. More off than on. When I got over to the Hewlett Police Department, Chief Nutter was inside the MRAP trying to figure out how to start it. "We're going to drive it through town." I stood below, looking up into the cab at him. "Why on earth?" "Gape and awe. We're going to show these bikers what they're up against if they start anything." He gave me a thumbs up like a fighter pilot and held the tough guy look for as long as he could, but then broke up laughing. "Gas station's on the other side of town, and if we don't put fuel in the damn thing, it's going to be useless." "Bill, you don't want my opinion on that." I stepped on the running board and glanced around at all the high-tech. "Why don't you bring the gas over here? Do you know how much fuel this thing holds?" He glanced around the cab, looking for a gauge he could recognize. "Hell, I don't know how much fuel the thing holds. You think it's gas or diesel?" "You better hope it's diesel if you're aiming to get even a mile to the gallon." I took a look down the crowded street. "I'm trying to find Corbin. Last I heard, he was settling a dispute at the campground. But he should be back any time." He gestured toward the dash. "Hey, you were in the military. You should know how to start this thing." "Not really." I glanced around the interior at all the monitors and switches. The stuff we had in Vietnam was decidedly less advanced. "But I'll go hog wild and venture an opinion. Does it have a key?" "No, just had a padlock and a chain holding the doors closed, which are hydraulic like in Star Trek. Took us forever to figure out how to open and close them."
"Then there's a switch."
"No, there's not."
"It probably doesn't look like any switch you've ever seen, and there's probably a coil preheating mechanism." I started climbing up. "Get over in the passenger seat and let me take a gander." He did as I said and turned to look at me as I scanned the dash.
"What do you need Deputy Dog for?"
Spotting a less than obvious switch, I glanced at it to see if, as in most diesels, you just turned it in the opposite direction to preheat. But there was nothing. Finally spotting a safety toggle to the left, I hit it and watched as a red light came on beside the ignition, along with a spiral coil that lit, then flickered and went out. "He supposedly has a Taurus kid's cell phone, and I'd like the name of the woman who found Bodaway after the accident."
"Bodaway?"
"The kid that was in a wreck. That's his name, Apache."
"Oh."
I hit the starter, and the gigantic engine in the MRAP rattled to a lopsided cant, sounding a lot like Steamboat, an old B-25 I'd flown in years ago. Reaching over and tapping the fuel gauge, a habit I'd picked up from my old Doolittle Raider boss who had piloted the vintage bomber. I glanced at Chief Nutter. How far is it to the gas station?
About a mile.
You might make it. Well, let's go then. I laughed. I'm not driving this thing. Then who is? You're the one who is a jarhead and all. He nodded toward the crowded street.
I'm likely to run over a building or something.
I sighed and hit the push button to engage the drive, assuming R was reverse. All right, then, let's bring the mountain to Muhammad. He shook his head. You sure do know a lot of biblical quotes for a fella that doesn't go much for churchin'. I started easing the 15-ton behemoth backward, attempting to see if there was anything behind me on the street. That's not the Bible. It's Francis Bacon, from an old Turkish proverb. He shook his head some more and looked at me. Hey, you're good with names. What should we call it? How about the Pequod? He thought about it, but changed the subject. I'm going to turn the red and blues on, you know, to let them know we're cops. He reached overhead and flipped another toggle. I know where that is because I was the one who had him installed. He held out a piece of paper with a diagram. Shows the lights right here. It's also a PA system, if you want to announce our presence with a sense of authority. Having successfully backed the MRAP, I was looking point-blank at the quarter mile of Hewlett's main and only thoroughfare, the direction we would be heading before taking a left and pulling into the Dakota Gas Company like happy motorists. I don't suppose there's a siren, just to let people know that this thing actually moves, is there?
There could have been, but I didn't order that.
I nodded, straightened my hat, and pressed the D button. Hitting the gas, I was appalled at how fast the gigantic vehicle moved and immediately adjusted the weight of my foot on the accelerator.
Wow! Dual turbos and an overdrive!
He giggled. I opted for those, too. We went down the hill at a reasonable speed, and it was interesting to see the crowd's reaction to the bright white Colossus, most just standing with their mouths agape, figuring they were being invaded. I paused at the only intersection in town, but I needn't have bothered since the gape and all portion of the exercise appeared to be holding sway. There were about 8 bikers on one side and a pickup truck, sedan, and a few more bikes on the other, but they were all stopped, probably afraid that we were going to open fire. I glanced around, half expecting to see a turret and a 50.
Is this thing armed?
Bill had broken out what I assumed were the copious manuals for the vehicle, and was now studying the door in search of a window crank.
How do you think the windows work?
They probably don't. That would compromise the ambush-protected part of the MRAP title.
How the hell are you supposed to yell at everybody?
I pulled forward through the intersection. That's what the PA system would be for.
Oh, we gotta find that.
Oh, no, we don't. He studied the manual some more.
In answer to your question, no, it doesn't have any guns on it. Hell, it's just a big truck that's hard to blow up. But you'd think we were trying to bring a tank in here when I was fighting with the county commissioners about the thing. There's this one old hippie on the board from Sundance, and she's sure we're trying to militarize the police department. Hell, there's only 2 of us, so I'm not so sure how much militarization we could summon up.
What was the name of the guy that underwrote this thing for you?
Bob Nance, one of those computer wizards from out of California. A specialist in acoustics, something or other. He's got a place up at the golf course, comes out here in the summers to play and pretend he's a cowboy. Of course, I never met a cowboy with a log mansion on the 9th green.
Traveling at a majestic 5 miles an hour, we were approaching the Ponderosa Cafe at Midtown, where I could see Corbin Dougherty leaning on his vehicle as he talked to a group of bikers, all of them pausing in their conversation to watch the rolling fortress pass by.
Hell, there's Deputy Dog. You want to stop and I'll figure out how to open the door?
I kept moving. Why don't we spare ourselves the embarrassment? I'll get the information I need from him on the walk back. Bill looked a little unnerved.
You're not going to drive it back for me?
Wasn't planning on it. Anyway, you're going to need the practice.
What if I run over somebody?
You'll hardly feel it. I made the left, careful to avoid Lola's Cadillac parked next to the sidewalk adjacent to the motel, where I'd left it earlier, the keys in the ignition, as she'd requested. We crossed the Belfouche Bridge, and I was just glad the thing held. Amazingly enough, the MRAP had turn signals, and I clicked the stem down, indicating an impending left. The oncoming bikers had already stopped, never having encountered a great white whale like this one. I spun the wheel, goosed the accelerator, and the big truck leaped across the lanes and roared into the Dakota Gas Company lot, where I figured out pretty quick that it wasn't going to fit under the awning.
"Oh, you whale, now what? There's a big rig island in the back. Just circle around there."
I did as instructed and pulled up to the diesel pump with the green handle, then hit the N button and subsequently the P.
"There you are, Captain, my captain. She's yours from here on out."
He reached around behind him, then began patting all his pockets with his hands.
"I appear to have left my wallet back at the office. You wouldn't happen to have some cash on you, would you?"
"How's the bike?" We were sitting in the Ponderosa bar behind the Ponderosa Cafe. Actually, we were sitting at a picnic table in the alley behind the Ponderosa bar, behind the Ponderosa Cafe, because it was the only place where there were a couple of seats together, and we were soon to have guests. "Irreparable, I hope." The bear rewrapped the gauze and ace bandage around his hand after readjusting the nonstick pad that covered the burn he'd received from the KTM as it had attempted to squash him like a bug.
"I bent a few things, but we'll be ready for tomorrow."
"Why?" Exasperated, which I could tell only from a slight change in the angle of his head, he turned and looked at me.
"You act as if I am the only one who does crazy things."
"Name one crazy thing I do."
"It is pinned to your shirt."
I sipped my Rainier. Actually, it's in a natty leather wallet in my pocket.
"You know what I mean."
It was a velvety evening in the Black Hills, and the slight breeze carried the scent of the pines and the clear high country air, or maybe it was the lumber yard on the other side of the river. "That's different, it's my job." He raised an eyebrow and savored his Snowden Cabernet.
"Why is that different? I'm thinking it might actually be worse."
"Why?"
"Mine is driven by passion, yours by wages."
I gave him the eyebrow back. "Civic duty, if you please."
"Even worse, insanity as a duty?"
"The insane part of my work is accidental, an improvisational byproduct, whereas you are actually courting crazy."
"Not true. I am, like you, participating in actions which may or may not lead to certain results which you deem as crazy."
"No, you choose to do these things."
He gestured with the wineglass. "And you did not choose to wear that badge in the natty leather wallet?"
I considered it, and then raised my bottle in a toast as he joined me.
"Touché. What are you guys toasting?"
I looked up at the smiling man with the blue sweatshirt and mop of silver hair.
"Well, if it is a no-go, no-go."
I scooted over and made room for the traffic expert for the Division of Criminal Investigation. He sat, and I noticed that he'd already fortified himself with a beer from the bar, a prudent action seeing as how we hadn't spotted a waitress in 20 minutes. The investigator glanced around, pushing the hair from his face.
"Kind of crowded around here."
"'Tis the season." Mike nodded to Henry.
"You make your time trial over in Sturgis?"
The bear smiled.
9/10 of it."
"Uh-oh." I shrugged. "He's in the front third."
Mike seemed impressed. "Well, that means they think you'll actually make it. The guys they throw in the back third are doomed."
Henry nodded.
"I know, I have been there."
"What time is the race tomorrow?"
8.
"In the morning?"
He drank from his beer.
"I'm not through throwing up by then."
Spotting a waitress rounding one of the other tables, I flagged her down and turned back to my comrades.
"I'm getting another. You guys want something?"
Agreeing that we might not have another opportunity, I ordered a double round and then turned back to Mike.
"Did you have a look at Bodaway's bike?"
"No, but I saw the incident location."
"And?" He took a couple of sips of his beer, encouraged by the hope of another.
"It rained, of course, and there's been no end of traffic on that road."
Yeah. He smiled.
"There are about 3 different types of gyroscopic instability on a motorcycle. The ones that happen at high speed are weave and wobble, both occurring at more than 80 miles per hour and on dry pavement. Weave is a snake-like oscillation of the motorcycle around its center of mass.
usually confined to the rear of the bike. It doesn't have much of an effect on the steering, but does generally cause the bike to weave from side to side along the path of travel.
And wobble?
Wobble is uncorrected weave, where it begins to affect the frame of the bike and then the steering axis. The transition from weave to wobble is about 0.02 seconds, and I don't even think the great Henry Standing Bear has reflexes that quick. He smiled at the Cheyenne Nation. Once the wobble sets in, the motion becomes so severe that the rider loses control and the bike is slammed to the pavement, resulting in a totaled bike and a dead rider.
Factors?
He palmed a chin and looked at me through the silver curtain, partially hiding eyes that had seen more vehicular mayhem than I would ever want to.
Weight distribution, center of aerodynamic pressure, tire inflation, tire size, tread shape and wear, and rider weight.
He's not a large man.
And the bike?
I paused for a second and then recited what Sheriff Engelhart had said to me at the impound lot. 09 Harley crossbones. Springer front with a soft tail rear, and I have no idea what I just said.
Big bike.
It looked big to me, but that just makes it a larger death trap.
Can't you just slow down?
I finished my beer as the other drinks arrived.
Does anybody have any money?
They both looked at me. The gas station over here doesn't take credit cards, and I had to use all my walking around money to fill up Chief Nutter's MRAP.
Mike studied me, pretty sure this was the most elaborate way of getting out of paying a check he'd ever heard.
A what? The Cheyenne Nation handed me a 50, which I transferred to the waitress.
Keep the tip.
Henry shook his head as I handed him his 2 glasses of wine and Mike his beer backups.
So, can't you just slow down?
It happens too fast, and at that speed, most riders make the mistake of slamming on their brakes instead of redistributing their weight by transferring it from the saddle to the pegs. And add-on accessory boxes can change both the weight distribution and the aerodynamics.
Mike glanced at me.
You saw the bike?
I did, and I saw the kid, too.
Sticking to the subject at hand, he asked about the motorcycle.
Was it stock?
How the heck should I know?
You say it had the Springer forks?
I looked at him blankly.
Did the front have a set of springs, kind of vintage-looking?
Yep. Those models can get out of tune and cause problems.
There's something else. Were there any saddlebags on it, big ones?
No, but there was gold paint.
He looked at me. What color is the bike?
Black.
You think somebody hit him?
I can't be sure, but I think you'd better take a look at the bike and then the car I've got on loan.
Well, when I got down to Rapid, I pulled the phone from my pocket and handed it to him as he gave me a questioning look.
When did you start carrying a cell phone?
I pointed at Henry.
It's his.
I took pictures.
Well, Earl Engelhart did.
I gestured toward the device.
I barely know how to take a photo.
It's pretty easy to operate. You just hit the little icon that looks like a camera.
Here, see?
He showed me and began swiping through the photos, finally glancing at the bear.
You mind if I send these to my email so I can look at them on my computer?
The Cheyenne Nation tipped his wine.
Feel free. I just own the thing.
Mike smiled and began pushing buttons.
By the way, Walt, you described the bike magnificently. It almost sounded like you knew what you were talking about.
Thanks.
As the investigator worked, I glanced at the bear.
Why would Lola hit her own kid?
Henry shrugged.
You have a child, you know how it is.
His face tightened in a slight smile, and I looked past him where I could see a table of women who were openly staring at him. I sometimes forgot the effect that the bear had on the opposite sex, but then, when I saw any of them around him, I remembered.
Seriously,
Walt, you have to remember that my interaction with this woman is almost 30 years old. I have no idea what her relationship with her son is like. And with someone like Lola, I am not remotely willing to guess.
Novo handed Henry his phone and then turned back to me as the Cheyenne Nation checked for messages.
You said there were 3 specific types of gyroscopic instability on a motorcycle.
Mike smiled.
I did. And though the 3rd usually doesn't leave marks on the pavement, we were lucky that the kid was riding in the emergency lane and the pavement was remarkably fresh.
Wait, he was riding on the edge of the road?
He nodded.
Just on the other side of the rumble strip.
Where he ran off the road.
No, he was riding there for quite a ways. And here's the thing. There was an instability, but it was a low-speed phenomenon called flutter, which is when the front tire and steering assembly experience rapid oscillation. Think of an unsupported caster on a shopping cart. It happens only one way, when the rider's hands are not on the handlebars.
Henry and I looked at each other and then back to Mike.
So you're saying that he was riding on the edge of the road with his hands doing something other than steering?
Mike nodded again.
Yes. And if flutter is the case, then that means there must have been something on the rear of that bike.
Like the heavy saddlebags you mentioned?
Or
what?
From the photos you took, I could see that there was a seat pad on the Harley.
The Cheyenne Nation carefully set his wineglass on the uneven surface of the old picnic table, his voice rumbling in his chest.
Then someone was on the back of the motorcycle.
Chapter 4. The bear decided to stay at the Pondo, as the locals called the bar, and talk with Jamie and some of the other hill climbers who had arrived as our little party was breaking up. But I was worried about Dog back at the motel cabin. I thought the quiet by the river might be a chance for him to get out, and evidently he thought so too. I walked along after him in the thin fog that rolled off the water as he sniffed at the high stalks of grass and the cattails that had sprung up near the edge.
Don't get any wise ideas. I'm not sharing my bed with a wet dog.
He ignored me and trotted on along the bank to where I could see someone in the mist. I was about to call Dog off, but he seemed to know who it was. After another step, I recognized her profile and I joined them.
Hello, Lola.
She didn't look at me but petted Dog's wide head.
Hi, Sheriff.
Did you get your keys?
No.
I put them under the floor mat on the driver's side.
You don't have to do that. Nobody outside of the Trade Chain Nomads would touch that car.
I stopped and turned to look at the river, the fog rolling tendrils from the surface, the water reflecting the high clouds just starting to disappear in the dusk.
I guess it's the lawman in me, but I can't leave the keys in the ignition of a car, especially in a town with thousands of bikers in it.
She glanced at me.
Although I am sure 99% of them are good, law-abiding citizens.
I looked around. I'm amazed you found a quiet spot.
She took out a cigarette and lit it, taking a deep drag. Might be the only one.
You mind if I ask you a question?
Her voice took on an officious tone.
Where were you on the night of January 16th?
Something like that.
She stared at me. You serious?
I am. Where were you the night of your son's accident?
She took another drag on a cigarette. Who wants to know?
You wanted an investigator. This is called investigating.
Me?
Everyone's a suspect until we find out who did it.
So, you do think somebody did it?
Dog was getting too close to the water, so I patted my leg.
You're not answering my question.
She studied me for a moment more.
The Dime Horseshoe Bar in Sundance for the burnout.
The what?
They put up a big platform on the street and then guys ride their bikes up onto it and do these epic burnouts, you know, locking up the front brake and spinning the rear. Lots of smoke, lots of beer and leather. An all-American spectacle.
Are you driving your car?
It took her a few seconds to answer.
No.
And who was?
What are you saying?
Without laboratory analysis, I can't be absolutely sure. But it looks to me as if somebody hit your son with your car.
There was gold paint on the Harley, and there appears to be damage to the right front fender of the Cadillac.
There's damage all over my car. It's a beater.
It's a flake gold beater, a pretty unusual paint job.
I folded my arms and studied her.
I'll ask again, who was driving your car?
And I'll say, how the hell should I know? Everybody borrows it.
She smoked some more.
The thing was sitting where it is now that day, with the keys in it, so I literally have no idea.
Who usually borrows it?
Everybody. Everybody in the club, anyway.
She stopped talking and looked up at me. I think your exact words were, no one outside the Trey Trey Nomads would touch that car.
It couldn't be someone from our club.
You're sure of that? She didn't seem so, all of a sudden.
How many club members are there here?
A couple dozen, maybe?
Can you get me a list?
No, I can't do that.
She took another drag on the cigarette.
It would be like dropping a dime on them, ratting them out, you know?
I smiled my everybody's an outlaw until the outlaws show up smile. Well, I don't have the time to go around and ask 50,000 bikers if they happen to be members of the Trey Trey Nomads.
I can point them out to you.
And then what? I asked them if they happened to borrow your car on the night your son was run over? No, I think it would be a lot easier if you just asked around among your friends.
They're not my friends.
No, the exact term you used was family. She said nothing, and we both watched as a tandem of motorcycles thundered across the bridge above.